Welcome, sports fans, to another week of the Loveland Queen City Sports Podcast. I'm Chris Ball with my co-host Mark Rains. And Mark, I'll tell you, nothing makes me feel my age of 40 than shoveling 11 inches of snow.
Yeah, that was probably the heaviest snow I've ever shoveled this week. It wasn't just 11 inches. That was heavy duty snow. That was a lot. My back felt okay until like an hour and a half later, and then I was like, take some Advil that night.
Yeah. Getting old stinks, but I digress. something it's kind of bittersweet, Mark. We're going to be talking about our last Bengals football game of the 2024-2025 season, and makes me a little sad, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it's incredibly sad because it's what a wasted season with Joe Burrow having about as good a year as you can possibly have at quarterback, Chase going for the triple crown, having the NFL sack leader, T. Higgins had a great year himself, and you're sitting at home in the playoffs at 9-8, feeling like you could have beat anybody.
And it just there's so much to talk about between the Steelers game and the coaches firing and then how to make this team better. I mean, we've got a lot of off-season content to talk about and plenty of interesting topics to broach. So let's just start with the Steelers game, 19-17, the Bengals on Saturday night in front of a primetime nationwide audience had to win that game. It was not pretty at times, but it was a win at the end of the day. And, Joe Burrow didn't have some of the gaudy numbers that he's had in the past, but it was still a great night. 37 completions for 277 yards and a touchdown, to Ja'Marr Chase. And I guess when they started that game, Mark, it was another kind of it seemed to me game that they were going to start and keep playing all the way through. 9 plays, 73 yards to open up the scoring with that touchdown. And I thought, okay, we're ready to play and we're going to have an offensive explosion. And it just didn't turn out that way.
Yeah, it just didn't seem they were quite as sharp. I think not having Chase Brown was a deal, though. I don't want to like take away from how Herbert did. I thought he, gave the Bengals a decent day, but 20 for 69 is a lot different than what they got last time out of Chase Brown, who I thought was the best player on the field against the Steelers, or one of the best players on the field. He had a great game. The other thing, Ja'Marr Chase drops a touchdown pass, so there was another opportunity to score. I thought there were just a few kind of missed opportunities, but they did enough, and the defense made more plays than they have in the past. The last 2 weeks, if the defense played like they did the last 2 weeks against decent teams, really, they don't have to be great all the time, but make enough plays, this would be a 12 11 12 win team.
And you talk about that defense, and I think especially the way I don't know if it was I think it's a combination to be fair, but Russell Wilson, after throwing for 400 and some yards against the Bengals last time, was 17 of 31 for 148 yards. And when it got to when it was 19-17 and the Steelers got the ball back, you just had this sinking feeling kind of that we're all used to as Bengals fans that it's going to be a Chris Boswell, 20-17 kick job to finish it. But the defense played well and Wilson couldn't lead him down the field and ended up turning the ball over on downs and sealing the win for the Bengals. And I think you're right. The defense played obviously much better than they did last time. And like you said, Trey Hendrickson, sack leader, he had 3.5 in this game, just unblockable.
He was a monster all game long. That his best performance of the year, and it's just so disappointing because if the defense wasn't abysmal during that stretch where the Bengals were putting up an incredible amount of points every game, this team has a few more wins, and we're thinking about seeding, and we're thinking about matchups, and feeling pretty good about what this Bengals team can be. The two ball there's just I could keep going back to two Baltimore losses, the New England loss, the Pittsburgh loss. There's just so many games where this team had every opportunity to win it and didn't. And I mean, now we've had four straight winning seasons, but the last two we don't make the playoffs.
And last season is, with a backup quarterback at the helm too, which is, you kind of understand the, maybe not making the playoffs or not playing your best with that situation. But as you said, there's really no, I mean, there's no excuse. I mean, it's just pure, difficult play on the field and inconsistent play. And I don't know if I can pin down, what was the difference between these past 2 weeks against the Broncos and Steelers for this Bengals defense as it was earlier on in the season. I mean, apart from young players maybe having, more reps and Lou Anarumo giving those players more chances to be on the field. But other than that, I mean, it wasn't like a night and day difference on the defense, but you could tell they were trending better. And if you just had a few more weeks left and a few more games to play, how much better might they be?
Yeah, I think it's the young guys. I do think they got a lot more production out of some of the young players late in the year. And on the defensive line in particular, but in the defensive backfield, I thought they got more production out of their young guys later in the year. It just made a huge difference because they were so bad at some of these positions throughout the year. They couldn't get a pass rush from anywhere other than Hendrickson. The back end was just getting torched by any competent quarterback. And you just need a decency. You need guys that, that are only going to get torched sometimes, that are going to be close to the play. So if the quarterback misses by a little, you can break it up. I mean, they just weren't anywhere close for such a long time. And then at the end of the year, they were playing good enough. And if they had played good enough all year, we'd feel a lot better. I mean, last season's why I felt so good about this team going into the year is because they were able to withstand not having Burrow and having a quarterback that, he did a nice job, but it was a lot of good game planning, a lot of managing games and figure things out and getting help from the defense. And we didn't have any of that this year. And it was just so disappointing as this team is so much better than what they finished.
I do want to give kind of a shout out to the Bengals offensive line. They still allowed 4 sacks, but Cody Ford playing injured at times, and the rest of that offensive line keeping TJ Watt in check was pretty impressive, I felt. So a shout out to them. And as you said, Khalil Herbert, I think, played pretty well under the circumstances. And another kind of freak thing was the Joe Burrow's interception, right? It kind of bounces off someone's hand and right to the Steelers. So other than that, I mean, Burrow took what the defense gave him, and he looked pretty good in that one, I think.
He was a little behind on that pass, and it went off the hand, and they made a nice play. It happens. It's not something you're going to get too up in arms about, especially the way Burrow's been performing all year. So, yeah, it's not too much to complain about. I wish they would have finished a few more of these drives with touchdowns in that game. That was probably the biggest disappointment. But they took care of business, and they beat the team they needed to beat. They gave themselves a chance, and the Chiefs decided that we're going to lie down, and that's where we are.
Yeah, I wanted to get your thoughts on that. I saw you were pretty vocal about it, and I completely understand. I mean, so after the Bengals win, of course, the two teams that you need to win are the Jets and the Chiefs, and you're banking on Aaron Rodgers. Like I said last week, and I got to give Aaron Rodgers credit. I sold him a bit short. He led the Jets to a win and kind of kept up his end of the bargain, but it was clear from the first snap of that Chiefs game that they were just not going to put any effort into trying to win that game against the Broncos, unfortunately.
Yeah, it seemed like less than any effort, and it's a problem, but there's nothing you can do about it, right? I mean, you just have to be above board. You got to be well in the playoffs, so something like that can't come hurt you, because that's the best team that the Colts are gonna or the Broncos play all year, and they don't have to play them as the best team. They get to play them as the worst team they play all year. I mean, that's a huge difference in the schedule that you're facing. And it is real frustrating because the Bengals and Broncos were essentially the same team. Neither of them could beat good teams all season, and they beat up on the bad teams all season. And the Bengals got that win against the Broncos, and the Broncos then were able to play that team that was supposed to be a good team on their schedule, but as a bad team because they didn't try. They sat everybody down. They didn't even the backups didn't seem like they were trying to do much. It just an awful performance for them. And so the Broncos get to slide in, sneak into the playoffs, and I'm annoyed by it, but at the same time, there's nothing you can do that. There's really no way to fix that situation, right? That situation is going to be there sometimes. It's the nature of the beast of how they do the playoff teams in the NFL, and we're talking about the seventh playoff team in the conference. So we're not, that's that they didn't even used to have it. So it's really hard to get too up in arms about it.
And like you said, I mean, you just win those games. You win that Patriots game if you're the Bengals. You have, some better kicking in the Baltimore game, and You don't allow Russell Wilson to throw for over 400 yards against you in Pittsburgh. I mean, there's plays aplenty that we can go back and look at as, you know, the reason why the Bengals are here today. And, you know, you never want to be in a position to have to rely on Carson Wentz and a boatload full of backups to get you into the playoffs. And unfortunately, that's where we are. So,
Well,
I
and
mean,
they kept Taylor, which I'm fine with, but I'll tell you what, a big reason they lost some of those games early is Taylor's game management early in the season was terrible, and he played games scared, and you know, we get that turnover against Baltimore and he runs it into the line against a stack box three times to kick a 55-yard field goal or whatever it was, instead of getting to inside 40 where we haven't where the where your kicker hasn't missed one in his entire career. And so it's his fault in some ways that we didn't make the playoffs. It's a lot of blame to go around, but it is his fault in some ways. And I thought he was much better late in the year. I thought he was aggressive on fourth downs. I thought he was aggressive in keeping the ball in Burrow's hands when he needed to. It's how he has to play all the time. When the Bengals have played their best under Taylor, they've been aggressive for the most part. And the problem is they go through stretches where they don't play aggressive and they play conservative and he doesn't manage the game like he has nothing to lose. And he needs to. And if he comes back next year and does that, I think he can be pretty successful because I think he's proven to be a really good offensive coach, a good offensive to, he runs a good plays. He's good with the with Burrow. He's good with the with Chase and T. These guys believe in him and they put up production for him. And even when he had to have Browning, he was able to get production out of him. So he does things well, but his game management at times is terrible. And it was improved late in the year. He's got to come back and do those things that he did on the back half of this season.
and you bring up a good point about coaching. So I'm sure everyone's probably heard the news that after the season was over, the Bengals let go of several coaches, including Lou Anarumo, defensive coordinator, their defensive line coach, linebacker coach, and also offensive line coach Frank Pollock. So it's as near to a house cleaning in terms of assistant coaches as you can probably have for a franchise. And that really puts the focus on Taylor next year, like you said. The excuses are gone now. The people that are responsible to some extent for some of the Bengals' problems are gone. They're going to hire who they're, you know, going to hire. We'll talk about that in a few minutes, I'm sure. But it all comes back to Taylor now. It's on him. He's the guy that has to come back and as you said, fix the issues that really plagued him this year. And you want a head coach, just like any player, you know, anyone in this game, you want them to learn from the mistakes that they made in the past. And that's exactly what he's going to have to do with this opportunity in 2025. Hopefully, somewhat of a better schedule again due to their finish in the division and with healthy players. And we'll have to see who they re-sign. But again, it's all going to come back to can Zach Taylor learn from what went wrong this year and not make the same mistakes again?
Yeah, can he apply that the fact that he was aggressive and it paid off and bring that the whole season? Because if he's aggressive, this team is gonna put up points. They're gonna be in position to win, and they're probably gonna win a lot of those games. And so, it was so frustrating early in the year. I was ready to move on for him. I think he righted it enough in how he managed these games late in the year that you know he's what has four straight winning seasons despite everything, and he's you know so close to making another playoff. And with an awful, awful defense. And so you have to hope the defense improves next year. So I'm fine riding Taylor and give him another shot. But he needs to stick with the way he played this year at the end of the year, where he was aggressive, where he wasn't scared, you know, a little Dan Campbell-ish at the end of the year, which is what I like. I get so jealous watching Dan Campbell and the Lions and just they're playing to win games constantly. And I didn't feel that about Taylor most of the time is here. Some of his best moments were when I did feel that, like, you know, that Chiefs game back in the first year we made the Super Bowl where we kept going for it inside at the end of the game in the red zone. Like, that's the kind of thing that you love from him, and he didn't do it nearly enough. He started doing it at the end of the year this year. He needs to keep it up.
And I want to get your thoughts a little bit too about the new coaches that are coming in. So Lou Anarumo obviously is no more, and I think Bengals fans, you know, instantly were floating two names: Robert Saleh, former New York Jets head coach, and Dennis Allen, the former New Orleans head coach. And from what I've read online, I mean, it looks like they're not even to give those guys a phone call. And I was interested to see what you thought, Mark, about that defensive coordinator pursuit. I can't really think of a good reason not to at least bring those guys in for an interview, given their kind of pedigree and their past successes. What do you think about the defensive coordinator search so far?
I have no idea. I have a hard time following these searches. I don't know who for sure they're talking to. You get some reporting out there, and I don't know how true any of it is. So, I just want to get the right guy, and I don't know who the right guy is. And I want to get somebody who I like. One of the guys that they've talked about is Patrick Graham. I like a lot of what I've seen from him. So I'd be interested to see if he's the guy they lean towards. But I don't know. What are your thoughts? I don't have any strong feelings right now on the defensive coordinator search.
I don't I saw Patrick Graham, and I was kind of looking at his stats a little bit for the magazine a few weeks ago, and or a few days ago, I should say. And I feel like for the Raiders, they've been really up and down as well. And as a franchise, they're kind of, it's kind of a shambles franchise. But in 2023, I think he was averaging, I think, like 19 points per game they were allowing on defense, which was top 10 in the league. But the other 4 or 5 years in his tenure, they were all probably the bottom third of the league in defense. So I'm not sure he's exactly the kind of star power you want. But again, it's tough to know what the Bengals are going to do in their search because they're kind of tight-lipped about it. And I feel like I personally, and I can't speak for anyone else, I kind of get caught up in the big name signing. We all know, or a lot of people know, Robert Saleh about how well he did in San Francisco, coordinating their defense, and Dennis Allen as well. He's a great defensive coordinator, and I feel like those are big names that Bengals fans want to hear, at least the team trying to interview, trying to show that they are going to spend the money and pull out all the stops. Now, I don't have a football mind enough to know that they're going to definitely solve the Bengals' problems, and those guys may have job commitments otherwise, or they may be getting a head coaching job somewhere else, and that's why the Bengals aren't interviewing them. So I hesitate. I'm not an insider. I don't have any, special knowledge. It just seems like those are two names that should be at the top of anyone's list if they're serious about revamping this defense. But I'm not going to criticize the Bengals for it. I was kind of surprised that they weren't even making an effort to get those guys into an interview room.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. Yeah, and you brought up a good point. I don't, do you hear, if you're in the organization, do you hear like, well, the 49ers are already pretty far down the road with Saleh. It sounds like he's going to be back there. Do you hear things like that and, just move on to your next guys, the guys you're interested that might cost a little less, that are kind of up and coming guys you think might work better with Taylor? So I don't know. It's hard for me to tell. I want them to go make a good hire, and I don't know what that hire looks like. I love Saleh. I thought he would be a great hire because not only was he great in San Francisco, those Jets defenses were awesome when he was there. He had other issues as a head coach, but there was a huge drop off when they let him go on that defense. So yeah, he was a guy I would have been interested in, but how far is he down with some other franchises, and what are they looking for? What is Taylor looking for? You never know these things. There's a lot going on with this. I just want him to make a good hire. And I have a
Definitely.
hard time knowing what that is.
Right. Exactly. And we're gonna have plenty of time to talk about the Bengals. I want to give a, we're shifting obviously seasons a little bit, so I want to give a little bit more time to talk about the Bearcats and basketball. Unless you have anything else to say about the Bengals, but I feel like we got a lot to talk about with the Bearcats and how things are going with the meat of conference play coming in. So I kind of wanted to get to your thoughts on that.
Yeah, nothing else on the Bengals today. I mean, we're going to have lots of time to go over all the different offseason topics, as maybe we'll have a new defensive coordinator when we come back next week.
Exactly. So I'll set the stage a little bit, but I'm going to let the expert talk about, his thoughts about how the Bearcats are faring, but had two big games conference play this week. They lost to the Arizona Wildcats at home, 72-67, then head on the road to Baylor. And it's a tough place to play. Baylor's a very good team. They pulled out a 20-point win against the Bearcats, 68-48. From a layman's outside perspective, Mark, and feel free to take it wherever you want. It's just, it seemed like the Bearcats have been struggling on offense, and I can't explain it, but I'm sure you definitely have some good thoughts about why that's becoming a problem for them.
Well, you got to be able to make a jump shot is the first thing. If we go back to the Arizona game, they had some bad stretches, but it's not like they played that poorly that game. I remember we came in last week and I talked about like what they needed to do to win the game. And I said they needed to keep this Arizona team off the offensive glass because Arizona was, I think, the sixth in the country in offensive rebound percentage. And they held them to eight offensive rebounds, only let them rebound about 27% of their misses. That's a team that rebounds like 40% of their misses. So they did an excellent job on the offense or keeping them off the offensive glass. I said they needed to keep them kind of out, keep Caleb Love, make sure Caleb Love is the guy kind of taking a lot of shots, make sure he's scoring inefficiently. And Love was one of seven from two. He was two of eight from three. I said he could shoot him out of games, and he took a lot of shots and didn't do a lot with those shots. And I said they needed to not turn the ball over. And that UC only turned the ball over 11 times that game. And so you look at that game, and they did a lot of the things you expect a team to do to win against Arizona. But the problem is Arizona is a team that's really good at protecting the lane, and they give up a lot of open shots, and they gave up a lot of open shots to UC, but UC went 5 of 25 from three. You go 5 of 25 to three, it's going to be hard to win. And then they went 12 of 23 from the line. So they shoot 52% from the line. They shoot 20% from three, and they lose by five. It's a close game till the end. It's a game that was tied with a couple minutes to go. So I think that's just a game where if you make a couple shots, you win the game. I don't think they played poorly. I think they did a lot of things well that game. And that was the most frustrating part about the Arizona game. The Baylor game was a different animal. That was one of the poorest games I've seen since Wes has been the head coach. Everybody seemed tentative to do anything on offense. Baylor was switching everything on defense, and it seemed like they just didn't know what to do. They were just being really tentative on how they wanted to attack it. They put Baylor on the foul line way too much over the course of the game. I guess they only shot 11 free throws, but it felt like a lot more. They were 9 of 11. They let them get in the lane way too much. They scored a bunch of points in the paint, and UC did not get many at all. And it was another game. UC's 3-point percentage ends up looking okay at the end of the game, but from two, UC was 9 of 26, and part of that is they weren't getting to the rim. There were a lot of like mid-range kind of floater stuff, which are bad shots. And so just an all-out kind of awful performance. I believe they turned it over 15 times too, and it's not like Baylor is like a stifling really good defense. So one of the worst games I've ever seen them play, and I think they're kind of just in their own head. Shots hadn't been falling. Seemed like they were tentative, trying to figure out what they need to do, and weren't playing with like kind of the assertiveness you need to play to be good. The only guy who was playing with any sort of assertiveness at all was Dan Skillings, and he seems to always play that way. And even he was pretty inefficient from two. He just had a really nice game shooting the three.
You talked about the Bearcats being kind of in their head. I mean, we're looking at kind of this losing streak now as it's going from Kansas State, and now they have Arizona and Baylor. So you're at three games. You're starting out 0-3 in the conference. Do you feel like that's playing a role that it's they're starting conference play and that the losses are kind of starting one after the other? Do you feel like that's getting into their head, or what's stopping the offense from being as efficient as we saw earlier in the year, apart from they're playing much better competition, obviously.
That's the big thing. They're playing a lot better competition. These teams, what they're doing really is they're taking away the lob. So you're not letting, one of the things we did really well was Mitchell and Aziz. When our guards would penetrate and people would help, we'd hit them with the lob over the top and they'd dunk it. And we were excellent at that early in the year. And teams are taking away. And the way they're taking away is they're really just kind of backing off Jizzle and backing off Day Day and saying, all right, if you want to shoot it, if you want to do that mid-range, or that's fine, but we're not going to give you the lob. And the other thing they're doing is they're doing a lot of help from off the ball and leaving everybody open for a little bit at least, except for CMOS. So they're basically daring UC to beat them on jump shots, and UC's been missing a lot of jump shots. And until they knock some of those down, I think the offense is going to struggle at times because teams are camping out in the lane. They're keeping a foot in the lane, and they're not letting anybody get a good shot or get it close. It's really you got to hit a jumper over them. And what I think what needs to happen is because you got to still get to the rim. If these guys are going to back off of these guards and not give them the lobs, these guards need to drive into their defender. They need to try to get to the rim anyways, because Jizzle is too content to pull up and hit and try that mid-range jumper. Day Day is the same way. He just doesn't get to the rim nearly enough. These two guys need to get to the rim. if they're really going to be concentrating on taking away the lob. Because if they're going to take away the lob, they're going to be backing off Jizzle. They're backing off Day Day. So that's the big thing I see. And I think Jizzle's kind of in his head struggling, trying to figure out exactly how he wants to play right now. I think he'll come around. But yeah, it's they're 0-3. Had they won one of those first week, you feel okay. I did not expect them to win at Baylor. I did not expect it going into the year. I didn't expect it when we went there, Tuesday night. But you expected to get at least one of those first two. I thought they would likely get two. I thought they could be able to win at home against Arizona and win at Kansas State. And the Kansas State loss is probably the most brutal because Kansas State's been bad other than that game. They had two guys that just played, two talented players played pretty well, and UC didn't do quite enough. So yeah, you're 0-3. You shouldn't be 0-3. You should have at least one win. And now Kansas is coming to town. You're staring at 0-4 in the face. If you can steal the game against Kansas, all of a sudden there's an opening to kind of make, run off some wins and have a nice stretch. And so that it's a big deal because getting to 0-4, even if you run off some wins, you're still going to lose a couple of those games. You're still not going to be in great shape. So the Kansas game looms large. If you get that, you don't feel quite so terrible. You really only have one terrible performance. You have a couple games where Arizona, I thought you played pretty well and just didn't make shots. And you have the Kansas State game where you didn't play your best. They made some plays, but it's not like you were terrible. So getting the Kansas game would be a huge deal.
And so that Kansas game you mentioned at 2 o'clock on this coming Saturday. And so Mark, is there any special thing you're looking for in that game in terms of trying to jumpstart the Bearcats offense, apart from what you said earlier about trying to get to the rim and things like that? Is there something about Kansas you feel like the Bengal or the Bearcats, excuse me, can exploit, or is it just going to kind of be have to make your shots and do all you can to try to get your first conference win?
You know, it's kind of an interesting matchup in the sense that their fours are not like outside players, which you don't always see that much in college basketball, but it could play a little bit to UC's advantage in that they can keep some of their bigs around the basket. Particularly, they can keep Aziz around the basket. I mean that's gonna be big. But they also have, you know, a great post scorer in Hunter Dickinson. And Hunter can go out and stretch three. He's not shooting great from three this year. Kansas kind of turned their season around by really picking up their defensive effort. They're number four in adjusted defensive efficiency. They don't let you score at a high percentage. They don't let you score well inside or outside. They do give up a lot of 3-point shots, but again, that's not a good matchup for UC in that sense. It's because they give up a high amount of 3-point shots. Well, UC is not shooting 3-point shots very well. I think they're going to try to take away a lot of what UC likes to do at the rim, with the lobs and stuff like that. And you would hope you get some lobs on Hunter Dickinson, but you don't know. So the big thing is they can't turn it over, and Kansas isn't great at forcing turnovers, but they also Kansas is going to take care of the ball too. So keep them off the glass. The other thing is don't foul them. Kansas doesn't get to the foul line just like UC. UC really struggles to get the foul line. Kansas doesn't get to the foul line either. So keep them off the foul line, and you get to the foul line a little more because Cincinnati, that's one thing they've really struggled at. They've been better at it at home. They've really struggled at it on the road, getting to the foul line. If they can get to the foul line and make some shots there, I think that will be a go a long way to having a chance to win.
So what's your, I mean, I know you're obviously not the coach and we're not inside the locker room, but I mean, is your gut feeling that the team is going to kind of learn from the losses that they've had so far and regroup in front of a home crowd and like give Kansas all they can handle? I mean, is that kind of what you're thinking or?
I mean, I think it'll be a good game. Because I haven't seen these guys get blown out very often. The Baylor game was the first time this year. Last year, the only time in conference that they really got blown out was at TCU. They played a pretty terrible game, but they've been in every game in conference the last couple of years. I guess they did get blown out in the conference tournament semis or quarter against Baylor. They had won two games and then lost to Baylor again. I kind of think Baylor's a tough matchup for them generally, the way Baylor plays. So I think it'll be a competitive game. It's at the Shoe. So that tends to make me think it'll be competitive. But this team's really struggling, and so it's hard to go into a game feeling really good about it until you see them do it on the floor. And for me, the key to this team is Jizzle James. He's the guy who can get after it. He's the guy who can kind of change the dynamics of this team, because a lot of the other guys, like Simas, I love. He's a good player, but you can take him away if the other guys aren't holding up their end. If Jizzle's not putting a lot of pressure on the defense, if Skillings isn't putting a lot of the pressure on the defense, and I think Skillings will, but they need Jizzle to be the other guy putting a lot of pressure on the defense, because eventually you're gonna have to leave Simas if that happens, and then we can get him going again. I think Jizzle getting his game going is the key to this team, and he was great early in the season. He's kind of not been nearly as good since the competition has caught up. So that's the key for me. Can Jizzle really get his game going? West seems to think he can. He seems very confident in him. I have a lot of optimism about Jizzle too. Will it be this game? Well, we'll have to wait and see.
All right, well, if Mark, if you have any final thoughts about the Bearcats, feel free to let them out. I have a cool Michigan Cincinnati connection I want to talk about afterwards if you got done with the Bearcats, but let me know.
Well, so there's a couple things that I did want to get to, and one of them is free throw. So, like, since conference play started, I'm going to kind of go through a couple of the stats. It's really early. UC has played probably one of the most difficult schedules in conference so far, so take some of this with a grain of salt. But UC is shooting, they're 29.9 from three, which is 10th. Not terrible, terrible, but not good. They're 47.2 from nine, or 47.2 from two, which is 13th. Not good at all. They're 52% from the free throw line. I mean, that is crushing them. They're not getting there. When they get there, they're missing. And the reason they're missing is the wrong guys are getting to the line, right? If you want Jizzle to get to the line, you want CMOS to get to the line, you want Day-Day to get to the line, you want, to a lesser extent, Skillings to get to the line. Those are the guys that are going to make free throws. But the problem is you got your 30% foul shooter getting to the line more than anybody else, and he's been throwing up bricks. The opposition's meanwhile shooting 79% from the foul line, which is an absurd percentage. So we've had some bad luck in that sense, that everybody's like making their foul shots against us. But really, the only thing they've done well in conference is rebound. They're rebounding about 36% of their misses, and they've been cleaning up on the defensive glass too. So that's good, because rebounding is going to be a staple of this team. They've turned it over too much, which I think they will get lower. That they've typically not been a high turnover team. But it's just the shooting. You look at the shooting, and it's not where it needs to be. And until some shots go in, whether it's the free throw line, whether it's the 3-point line, whether you're getting some more layups, until that happens, this team's going to be in trouble. They got to make some shots.
Well, we'll certainly see against Kansas on Saturday. I'm sure it's a game all UC fans will be watching pretty close. And I had the pleasure of watching a former coach of the Bearcats struggle a little bit. That's Mick Cronin, as Michigan Wolverines went to the West Coast and won the second of their West Coast travel trip, 94-75 over the Bruins. I'm not sure if a lot of Loveland Magazine sports fans watched that game, but it was a pretty dominating win for Michigan. 20 or Vlad Golden for Michigan had a career high in that game with 36 points. And so Mick Cronin kind of went to the podium after it, Mark. I don't know if you saw it, but he called his team soft. And then he claimed that he had over a certain number of wins and he was basically above criticism. And it was kind of a crazy press conference for a college coach to have after a loss like that. But I don't remember Mick Cronin being quite that narcissistic, but it definitely came through after this one.
I've always thought he kind of is, and he seemed like it. That's probably why he left UC, to be frank, is the AD wanted to put some more incentive-based stuff in his contract about winning some tournament games, and he wouldn't have it. He ended up getting offered the UCLA job and took it. It's kind of interesting you bring up Mick, because Evan Maia pulled up, and there's a tweet. If you go look at Evan Maia's Twitter, at Evan Maia, he pulled up kind of like title fate. It's basically like a set out for offensive rating and defensive rating on like a graph, and it's in tiers, and he has like title favorites in the top right quarter, which are like Duke, Iowa State, Auburn, Florida, Houston, Alabama, and even Gonzaga's in there, and then some Final Four potential teams like Michigan, Mississippi State, Kansas, Tennessee. Kansas, Tennessee are toward the top of that. Arizona's in that group, and then the next group is where UC is. It's called the hit or miss, and they're kind of at the bottom of the hit or miss, but they're right next to UCLA. And if you look at how UC has played and how UCLA play, it's just offenses that are struggling and defenses that are great. And so, I mean, West seems to have UC kind of right where Mick had UC for most of his tenure is what I'm looking at it. Now I know Mick made the tournament every year, so you know this is the year UC needs to make the tournament because they're that caliber when you look at the metrics. But Wes right now has this team kind of right exactly where Mick had this team for the vast majority of Mick's time here, which was a team that defended the hell out of you and struggled to score. And so they were a team that, you know, could beat anybody at any given time, but was a little too inconsistent. This team, if it's going to reach its potential, it has to find its offense. So that's what I found interesting. And yeah, I wanted to let you know that because he's got Michigan as a Final Four potential, and it looks like, well, the way I look at it, viewed as the best team in the Big Ten.
Yeah, it's a very interesting take, and I think Michigan, with all the transfer players that Dusty May brought in, this team is essentially players that have never played together before. And so earlier on the season, you saw a lot of those struggles. I mean, they're a turnover machine essentially, and they're getting better each game. But I think it's a symptom of these players transferring and not playing together. But as you see them come together, I don't know of a better, big man combination than Vlad Goldin and Danny Wolf, because Danny Wolf's essentially a point guard that's 7 feet tall. And Vlad Goldin is the guy that is banging inside, he's getting rebounds, and he has a very polished offensive game for a guy that's as big as he is. And it really comes down to the guard play that Michigan has between Trey Donaldson and Namari Burnett. And, I think Roddy Gale, who's an Ohio State transfer. Those guys, if they start to hit, because at the end of the day, Vlad Goldin and Danny Wolf are where the points are going to come from for Michigan. The guards are kind of the wild card. They're either on fire or they're missing every shot. But as they get more acclimated with the big guys we have down there, they're just playing better and better. And to take 2 games from USC and UCLA on that West Coast road trip is pretty big for the Wolverines. So I'm happy to hear that they're seen nationally as a contender, especially after how the last few seasons over of Juwan Howard's tenure ended. It was unfortunate, and but I think Dusty's really turned it around, I have to say.
If you look at their KenPom stuff, they're number one in the country in effective field goal percentage, with an absurd 60.2%. It's an obscene 63% from two, and like yes, they're part a big reason for that is Wolf and Golden are monsters inside and both shooting 68 and 69% respectively. But you also, I mean, like your guards are getting to the rim and scoring efficiently, which you don't see that often. They got a You know, got Gale's shooting over 60% on twos. Cart Kaysen's shooting over 60% on twos. Burnett's shooting over 60% on twos. So, and I think Schessler's probably, or I don't even know how to pronounce that. Like Shedder, maybe. I don't know.
Cheddar, like the cheese,
Shedder.
cheddar.
Yeah, he's shooting 69% on twos. Now that's not a guard, but I mean, like everybody is shooting super efficient from two, like to a point you don't see that in college basketball. So yeah, it's a really unique team that is playing exceptionally well. So yeah, they should be a fun team, and they are going to be a Final Four contender in my opinion, maybe the best team in the Big Ten.
And to hear that from Mark Raines, the basketball expert, is certainly it's awesome to hear. So we're going to have a lot more college basketball content coming as we get into, March Madness, and that's going to be real fun to talk about. I think the last part, if it's okay with you, Mark, I want to talk about is the Cavaliers. They had a big win last night against the Thunder, and boy, I think you heard a lot of people talk about how the Cavaliers may be NBA Finals contenders after that game.
I mean, haven't they been that all year? I don't know. I think that I've felt like it all year. They're a finals contender. It's a good roster. They're deep. They've got good players, and I love their coach.
Yeah, and I think last night, I think without Chet Holmgren being there for the Thunder, it makes things a little questionable. But again, the Thunder still, even without Chet, were tops in the West. So it's going to be an interesting way they play again next Thursday in Oklahoma City. So quick matchup, quick rematch there for the Cavaliers and the Thunder. Be interesting to see if the Cavs can still pull out their magic on the road there in that game. But I'm happy to hear that the Cavaliers are considered tops in the Eastern Conference. I know a lot of Boston fans, especially, they're a little skeptical of the Cavaliers' ability to play in the playoffs. So we'll see how that one goes. But Mark, I appreciate you talking about some other stuff tonight and to get to the Cavaliers and Wolverines, and we'll be sure to focus more on the Bearcats as March Madness ramps up. But thank you for your
Top of the
time.
East is really good in the Eastern
Yeah.
Conference this year. Also, sorry.